Well, I hope you've still got Psalm 121 open in front of you. That's going to be a huge help. And if you set out on the journey with us last week, keep your walking boots on, because these psalms belong together. This one starts up where the last one left off. It's the same journey, and last week's hostility is this week's backdrop. Without it, this psalm too easily resembles a chocolate box cover, bit of slush, really. It starts to become twee, you know, the Lord watching over you and the sun not harming you, you know, you won't get sunburnt and so on. When the psalmist starts up, "I lift my eyes to the mountains," he's not saying, "I'm going the scenic route." He's saying, "This is bandit country." He's saying, "They could be behind any rock, around any bend. This is perfect for an ambush." There's nothing cheesy about this psalm. We've got to put ourselves in the shoes of Christian brothers and sisters in danger, I think, if we want to read it and feel it properly. I only know a tiny bit of that. I remember going a few years back to Nigeria, to Jos there. I mean, things have been quiet in Jos the last two or three years, but back then it was much more on edge. And I was taken round the city. I was shown the marketplace, which had been car bombed just a few months before, scores of people dead. I was taken on a trip round some of the streets, and as we drove, my driver sort of said to me, "Look, we'd never go here in the dark, and we're not going to stop in the daytime either. That's too dangerous." And he would tell me stories of things that had gone on there. He pointed out one street, and he said, "Yeah, that's where a young Muslim man ran into some so-called Christian vigilantes, and they chased him, and he dashed into a house in the street, and it was the house of a Christian man, and the Christian man sheltered him, and when the vigilantes came hammering on the door, he refused to give him up. He said, 'No, I'm a Christian, I've given my word that we'll look after him.' And so he gave the man a bed for the night, left his family there with him. He was on a night shift, went and worked his shift, came back in the next morning and noticed the front door was ajar. And he goes into the kitchen and he sees the kitchen drawer with the kitchen, where the kitchen knives were kept, open. And he goes upstairs and he finds his wife and kids with their throats cut. The man had done it, apparently. You don't need many of those stories, do you, for all kinds of fears to be sparking around the place. I'm there with Ben and Gloria Quashy. Ben was the Archbishop at the time, and they knew this kind of violence. They'd had their home burnt down, fortunately, when they weren't in it. She'd been savagely attacked one time, lost her sight for a while. He'd also been attacked by a gang who'd put him on his knees and told him to pray his final prayer before they shot him, and for some reason didn't. And he says to me, "Hugh, we're putting you up in a hotel down the road because you'll be safer there." I was very safe there. I was only there for 4 or 5 days. But I wondered, what did it mean for them? I'd be safer there. That every time, well, every day that came, an attack might come. Every time they go out, they're going out into bandit country. Every time they come home, they're coming home to bandit country. Those are the shoes you're wearing as you walk with the psalm. Or take Central Asia. I was there last year. I was talking to some of the pastors where I was about, you know, the government and Christian communities there. And they told me about the paperwork and the rules and how hard it was to register as a legal and official church and how easy it was to be closed down. They could all tell me about a pastor or two who'd been arrested and imprisoned on false charges. Often the same names kept cropping up. There was nothing widespread across the board. It just seemed that every now and then the authorities would close a church down or imprison a pastor, and the Christian community was small enough and word would get round and everyone would know the government was in control. The randomness stokes the fear. You know, who'll be next? Will it be my turn? I was talking with a friend who'd lived in another former Soviet Union country, and she said she always kept her head down when she passed a policeman on the street. She said, I never actually got stopped, but you always thought you were about to. She said, when every time I left the country and we reached international airspace, there was a great sense of relief, as if she realized the tension she'd been living under all the time. Those are the shoes the psalmist has on. Or come to the West. I mean, it could be any one of the latest spate of student unions threatening to restrict or close Christian unions, but here is Australia, where they've just held a public vote, clearly one for same-sex marriage, but during it, one person at any rate got sacked, and her employer wrote this. Today I fired a staff member who made it public knowledge that they feel it's okay to vote no. Advertising your desire to vote no for same-sex marriage is, in my eyes, hate speech. Voting no is homophobic. Advertising your homophobia is hate speech. It's not okay to vote no. It's a pattern that students and some employees will recognize at least a bit in this country. It's why so many are nervous and hesitant when conversation in the classroom or on the campus, in the office, comes round to Christian things. It's a nervousness that fits the psalm. I lift my eyes to the mountains, it begins. This is dangerous ground to be walking on. Where does my help come from? And if last week's song was all about the psalmist and his distress, this week the focus is on the Lord and his protection. Where does my help come from? The Lord, the Maker. My help comes from the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth, verse 2. This world, this hostile Psalm 120 world, is still his world. He is the Maker. But he also maintains it, controls it, directs it according to his purposes. He is the CEO of the world he created. Oh, it's long been twisted well out of its original very good shape. It faces a continuous rebellion from us with often little or none of the Zimbabwean generals, this is not a coup, subtlety. Yet all the same, a sparrow doesn't fall to the ground without him knowing. And the hairs on our heads are numbered, an easier task with some of us than with others. Now, this is God. And if we're on dangerous ground, he's the one to face it with. He's the one the psalmist looks to for help. Enemies may have the mountains and hills to help them. He has the Maker of the mountains and the hills. The Lord, the Maker. But he's also the Lord, the Guardian. Because if there's one truth repeated over and over, it is that the Lord is he who watches over you. Five times in five verses, it's repeated. This is the Guardian God. Now, look at the psalm as a whole and get a feel for it. You see, verses 1 and 2, here is a solo voice. An individual singing of his anxieties or of her hopes. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth. And then in verse 3, in comes another voice. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. And then a whole chorus full of voices chime in with their reassurance in verse 4. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And we forget too easily, I think, the power of song to encourage us. Not every hymn or worship song is directed exclusively towards God to be sung with my eyes closed as if it's just between him and me. Many are written for us to sing to each other, to remind each other of the gospel, to encourage each other in our faith, to focus each other on the Guardian when we're in bandit country. Now, talking of songs, as you get older, You have to rely on your children to keep you up to date and trendy, or as they would tell me, get me up to date and trendy. And when they've left home, it gets even harder, doesn't it? I mean, you've only got your friends to do it, and they're getting older too. My colleague Melinda Hendry's best effort at cutting edge cool was to tell me of a 1990 Bette Midler song, From a Distance. Great song, they don't make music like this anymore, someone. Someone commented on the YouTube page, and you understand why. God is watching us. God is watching us. It echoes the psalm, doesn't it? And then ruins it all. From a distance. Yeah, where the world seems in harmony if you don't look closely. From a distance. Well, the guardian certainly isn't keeping his distance in this psalm. In Psalm 121. He is up close and personal and where the action is. Indeed, verse 4. He who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. I can remember being told of when the Wesley brothers, John and Charles Wesley, deeply religious but not really converted, went to America on a ship with Moravian missionaries on board, and they were caught in a violent storm, and as panic spread, the missionaries, men, women and children, remained calm, even slept. Wesley asked, "How can you sleep through all of this?" And they replied, "Well, the Lord neither slumbers nor sleep. There's no point in us both staying awake." It fueled the Wesley's appetite to trust this Lord like that. Verse 5, "The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand." See, there's no distance here. Whatever danger lies in the hills, this protection is closer at hand. The sun will not harm you by day, verse 6, nor the moon by night. Threats can come in the light or in the dark, but this is protection against either. They can be rational or irrational, sunstroke or moonstruck, as someone put it. Actually, this is really a Hebrew way of naming two ends, the sun and the moon, and including everything in between. And the guardian's protection becomes even more inclusive by verse 7. "The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and your going." See how the psalmist wants me to regain my confidence, however hostile the world around me, wherever my comings and goings take me. Back home, onto the ward, into the lecture hall, the coffee shop, or in the public square, or my private circle. Wherever they take me, I'm not out of reach or out of sight of the watching guardian. This is 24/7 protection. It's not just for the religious bit of life, as if discipleship could be restricted to that. Now, of course, "the Lord will keep you from all harm" can sound very glib. But keep here doesn't mean extract me from all harm. It means keep me in all kinds of harm. Christians face troubles just like everyone else, and then often more of them. The last couple of weeks I've been in touch with Christians who've been on the receiving end of violence and illness and job loss and sexual abuse. So what does it mean to be kept from all harm if Christians get ill, hurt, wounded, abused, killed, as well as die? Well, look again at verse 7. "The Lord will keep you from all harm" is followed by "He will watch over your life." And often in the Psalms, the second line explains the first, or says the same thing another way. "He will watch over your life," and that word's really got the sense of watch over your soul. Psalmist doesn't live in la-la land. He's not glib. He's tasted the hostility of last week's psalm. But he's got this confidence that the Lord will watch over his soul and keep his soul in the midst of all harm. He doesn't have to be able to answer every why question we ask. As Jimmy said, "The truth of what I do know is better than the truth I don't know." The psalmist has this confidence, the Lord will watch over your soul. And he's not trying to fool us. He's not trying to promise us a comfort that's not real. The promise is not for a cushioned life, but a kept one. I mean, take probably the most famous psalm of them all, Psalm 23. take probably its best known verse, verse 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Now, none of us can avoid walking through that valley. It may take you just a moment, as it did a cousin of mine 10 days ago. He went to sleep on Wednesday night and never woke up on Thursday morning, just had a massive stroke in his bed. It may take you years, as with Jimmy. The psalmist knows that, and he's sure he's not beyond the Lord's reach. David Watson was one of the leading evangelists in the UK in the 70s and the early 80s. I led a mission with him once. Well, to be honest, he spoke, I carried the bags. But he got cancer. And in his last book, it was written as he was dying from it and told of preparing for his death. And it was called Fear No Evil. Connie Murembi was a long-standing member of the All Souls family, who also died of cancer earlier this year. I visited her in hospital. We both knew it was the last time we would see each other in this world. I was the typical Westerner, you know, who expects life to be easy and safe. She, the African, expects suffering and has an eye for God's presence in it. I'm sitting by the bedside. I'm thinking how awful, how sad. She is saying to me how good God is, how much she's looking forward to her future. You know, the life her maker had designed and kept for her, she was the Christian one. She had the psalmist's confidence. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He'll watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. Derek Kidner wrote of that last line, "It's hard to decide which half is more encouraging, the fact that it starts now, or that it runs on not to the end of time, but without end." I lift up my eyes to the mountains. See, bandit country is an unavoidable part of the journey of life. Where does my help come from? I can't handle it on my own. My help comes from the Lord. So do you have that confidence? Do you share his assurance? Can you head into bandit country with the maker behind you, so to speak, the guardian watching over you? I mean, put yourself in the psalmist's shoes. The pilgrim is, as David Attenborough might say if he had the insight, the pilgrim is a protected species. Can we step out into the week with that thought to counter our fears? And there's more still to come. The Lord, the maker, the Lord, the guardian, the Lord, the shepherd. Because hundreds of years later, Jesus of Nazareth would put flesh on the bones of the Lord, so to speak. Don't imagine his watching over is simply viewing banks of CCTV screens. It's more personal than that, and it's more costly than that. "I am the good shepherd," Jesus said. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and doesn't own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. And then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. Without a shepherd, to mix my metaphors, sheep are sitting ducks for the wolf. Well, they're easy prey anyway. It's not enough, is it, as you read that, to have a shepherd, a God, a protector, because too many of them run away when the danger comes. Lorna Ashworth has been on the Church of England's General Synod for 12 years. She was a member of the Archbishop's Council until she resigned from both the other day. And in explaining her decision, she said this of the Church of England: "As a corporate body, we've become unable to articulate the saving message of Jesus Christ, which fully encompasses the reality of sin, repentance, and forgiveness." And she says, "Without this message, we don't teach a true gospel, and people do not get saved." See, you can call yourself a denomination, a church, a minister, but to say that what God calls sin is not a sin and not a danger, and seek to bless it. To speak as if God's judgment is not a reality is to act like a hard hand, to run away and leave the sheep defenseless against the wolf. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus paid that price, died that death, tasted the awfulness of sin and judgment so that we might escape it. The Lord will keep you from all harm, but only by coming to harm himself. His soul, his relationship with God the Father was fractured so that ours might be kept from that harm. We'll call him Ben. Ben was a fine Christian man, many, many years a Christian, and he got depression, and his depression shook his feelings and shook his faith. I'm God forsaken, he would tell you. And time and again, we'd say to him, Ben, you're not. Jesus was God forsaken, so you need never be. I don't know how many times we said that to him, but when after 2 or 3 years, the depression finally lifted, I can't tell you of the joy and the gratitude. The looking back and realizing the shepherd had been watching over his soul all the time. Jesus entered our world to rewrite our stories, to change the trajectory of our lives, to make things, the world and us, new. But more of that next week. Tonight? Well, tonight we all head out of the doors soon. We'll all head into the dark and the week ahead and bandit country. Will you head there with the confidence of a protected species? Will you keep walking in the steps of the psalmist this week? I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth, the guardian who watches over, the shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. Will you be walking this week with him? Let's pray. My help comes from the Lord. Lord, thank you. You do not leave us alone. Thank you that you go with us into whatever makes this week ahead bandit country for us. The Father who made us, the Son who gave himself for us, the Spirit who watches over us. May that God and that confidence be ours this week. Amen.